Headlines. Iran says it is ready for a swift conclusion of the Vienna talks on the revival of the JCPOA if the U.S. is also prepared and willing to do the same. Hezbollah releases a video of Israel's operations in a disputed Mediterranean gas field, warning that all the regime's targets are within the reach of its missiles. Also, Israel says it will maintain a partial freeze on Palestinians' tax revenues. Palestinians say the decision amounts to piracy and theft of their money. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. Iran says it's ready to conclude talks to revive the JCPOA in a short period of time should the U.S. show willingness to make a deal. Ali Bogheri Kani, Iran's deputy foreign minister, says Tehran has shared its ideas for reaching a swift conclusion of the JCPOA revival talks with other parties. He says Tehran will continue to work with its JCPOA partners to give the U.S. another chance to show good faith and act responsibly. The deal was clinched between Iran and the P5 plus 1 group to allow for the removal of anti-Iran sanctions in exchange for restrictions on the country's nuclear work. The U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the accord in 2018 and reinstated the sanctions. Tehran says the revival of the deal hinges on Washington's political will to provide guarantees that Iran can reap full economic benefits under the accord. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has released a video showing surveillance of several Israeli chartered ships operating at a Karish field in the Mediterranean Sea, which is partly claimed by Lebanon. The footage includes detailed coordinates of Israeli ships showing their names and locations. The video also shows Hezbollah's anti-ship missiles being prepared to be fired. The video refers to warnings by Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah earlier this month that all Israeli vessels at the Karish field are within the reach of the group. He warned that if Lebanon was prevented from extracting oil and gas in its waters, nobody would be able to do so. The dispute between Lebanon and Israel escalated in early June after Israel moved an extraction vessel to the Karish field. The video was released hours before U.S. mediator Amos arrived in Lebanon to push for the settlement of the dispute. The Palestinian Authority has condemned Israel's decision to maintain a partial freeze on its tax revenues as piracy and theft of the Palestinian people's money. A Palestinian spokesman made the remark in reaction to a decision by Israel's so-called security cabinet to continue a partial freeze on Palestinians' tax revenues. The regime claims the decision comes in response to the financial support provided for the families of Palestinians that conduct operations against Israeli forces. The sum withheld by Israel amounts to about 600 million shekels, or $176 million. Palestinian officials say the move is contrary to international law. They have urged the international community to pressure Israel to stop such provocative measures, which only lead to further escalation in the occupied territories.
Our Navy is constantly improving, enough to mention the latest Zircon hypersonic missile systems, which have no countertypes in the world and no barriers. Dear comrades, their delivery to the Russian armed forces will begin in the coming months.
Well, Putin said the area of the deployment of the new missiles will depend on Russian interests. The country has conducted previous test launches of the Zircon from warships and submarines over the past year. Hypersonic weapons can travel at 9 times the speed of sound. Russia's President Vladimir Putin has signed decrees approving the country's new naval doctrine, which names the U.S. and NATO as the biggest threats facing Russia. Putin signed the decrees ahead of a Navy Day parade in St. Petersburg. The new doctrine says Washington's strategic objective to dominate the world's oceans and NATO's expansion towards Russia's borders are the main challenges to the country's national maritime security. Moscow views NATO as an existential threat. It cited Ukraine's plans to join NATO as the reason for its ongoing special operation in that country. Addressing the Navy Day parade, Putin said the Russian Navy would receive unique cruise missiles within the next few months. Now, the latest updates from the war in Ukraine. Officials in the southern city of Mykolaiv say Russian bombardments have left at least two civilians dead and two more wounded. The officials called the pounding the strongest strike of the war so far. Mykolaiv is the closest Ukrainian city to the southern front, where Ukrainian forces are looking to launch a major counteroffensive against Russia. Strikes also pounded the northeastern regions of Kharkiv and Sumy. Kiev has already issued an evacuation order for tens of thousands of citizens in Donetsk. In the meantime, Moscow has accused Kiev of conducting a drone strike on its Black Sea fleet on the Crimea Peninsula. Russia says an explosive device from a commercial drone wounded six of its personnel. Kiev has denied any involvement. The negative economic data just keeps coming in. Europe, inflation and near recession of levels of growth with no end in sight, has many wondering if major Eurozone unrest is around the corner. Ramin Mazaeri has more from Paris.
Eurozone inflation increased a record 8.9% last month and shows no sign of slowing. Western commentators repeatedly tried to portray the news of the bloc's quarterly economic growth of just 0.7% as a positive, but being several ticks away from recession hardly seems like successful capitalism. Some in the mainstream media are finally calling it a cost-of-living crisis in Europe. That's something which the average household in France has felt since not just the 2008 economic crisis, but even since the inflation-producing introduction of the euro in 1999. Adding to the economic difficulty of the average European household is that 1 euro has collapsed to being worth just a cent or two more than a United States dollar. In 2008, the euro was worth $1.60. That makes imports more expensive, and the destruction of the euro's value is a major black mark for the leadership of the pan-European project. A major cause for the euro's depreciation is that it has been considered the weakest macroeconomy in the world since 2008. Their response to the unrest in Ukraine has now called the sovereignty of the pan-European project into question as well.
La crise financière.
The disastrous choice to follow the 2008 economic crisis with austerity policies created a structural lack of demand across Europe. Our situation is totally logical. Austerity's refusal to invest in society, combined with consumers' inability to purchase, means that the two primary economic motors are broken. We are essentially in a recession and maybe soon in a depression.
Europe's energy sources for this winter are reportedly on a knife's edge. The decision to sanction Russian energy over the unrest in Ukraine has produced record economic catastrophe, and years of shortages apparently still lay ahead.
To protect the French, the first thing is to institute price controls. As nearly all products are administered by corporations, this would be very easy to do. The second thing is to raise wages, especially for the poorest workers. This would solve our supply and demand problems.
That has many wondering if economic-related protests, a near constant across the Eurozone for the past decade, will be especially violent this autumn. Ramin Mazaheri, Paris.
French President Emmanuel Macron is under fire for hosting the Saudi Crown Prince despite his alleged role in the 2018 murder of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Let's see how social media users have reacted to the story.
Hey everyone, Ali Reza here, back with another hashtag trending. Today we're checking out how French President Emmanuel Macron has come under fire for hosting Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, under whose rule dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi was brutally murdered at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul almost 4 years ago. Rights groups say that the reception of the Crown Prince by world leaders is all the more surprising, given how many of them at the time expressed disgust and a commitment not to bring him back into the international community after the murder of Khashoggi. Social media users say that Macron is desperate to do what U.S. President Biden failed to accomplish, to persuade Saudi Arabia to produce more oil in order to address Europe's need for energy following the sanctions imposed on Russian oil and gas. Now let's take a look at our first batch of comments for the day. Sabine K. tweeted, French President Emmanuel Macron is hosting Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman for talks in Paris, defying criticism that the invitation is deeply inappropriate barely 4 years after the murder by Saudi agents of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Our next tweet comes from Samuel Ramani. As Joe Biden could not convince Mohammed bin Salman to increase oil production, Emmanuel Macron is trying to step in. France and Saudi Arabia held talks about mitigating the macroeconomic impacts of the Ukraine war. Kevin Doyle tweeted, the powerful are totally corrupt. Biden, Macron, Grigoriadis in Greece are all happily shaking hands with bin Salman of Saudi Arabia, a man directly implicated in the murder, dismemberment, and disappearance of writer-slash-activist Jamal Khashoggi. Several rights groups have already filed a lawsuit in Paris against the Saudi Crown Prince. The lawsuit says that France is obliged to investigate Mohammed bin Salman for complicity in torture and forced disappearance of Jamal Khashoggi. Let's take a look at this next tweet by Sarah Leah Whitson. At DonMena.org, which Khashoggi founded in 2018, and the Swiss campaign group At Trial filed a joint formal complaint in Paris against MBS for complicity in torture and enforced disappearance. Over here, Jeremy Smith said, diplomacy or normalizing the slaughter of journalists for a bit of oil, proof that social and environmental justice go hand in hand. Gareth Harding has our next tweet. 4 years ago, Saudi Prince bin Salman ordered a U.S. journalist to be chopped up. Now he gets red carpet treatment in Greece and a dinner date with Macron at the Elysee. Funny how that works. Lawrence Moss said, as a party to the UN conventions against torture and enforced disappearances, France is obliged to investigate bin Salman if he is present on French territory. That is a quote by Dawn, Open Society's Justice Initiative and Trial International. People have condemned the Western double standards in dealing with Saudi Arabia, considering Riyadh's war crimes in Yemen and its appalling rights track records in general. They say that values are being obliterated in the face of concerns about the rising price of oil. Now let's take a look at our final batch of comments. Our next tweet comes from Thierry Baudet. Western values. Emmanuel Macron sanctions Russia for invading Ukraine, but is inviting Mohammed bin Salman to dinner at the Elysee Palace. Even though Saudi Arabia invaded Yemen in 2015, creating one of the worst humanitarian disasters in the world. Well, in fact, Yemen is the worst humanitarian crisis in the world right now. Nabila Ramdani said, Emmanuel Macron returned from a trip to Africa where he lectured leaders about their alleged endorsement of Putin, but here he is embracing the Saudi autocrat and treating him to dinner at Elysee. Despite Mohammed bin Salman's war crimes in Yemen and human rights abuses, which would take a while to list. And our final comments comes from Kate Palmer. She said, Western democracy's efforts to court the major oil-producing state amidst the war in Ukraine continues with MBS's visit to France. Macron is making his country the hypocrisy in action leader of the free world, as he seems to have forgotten Saudi Arabia's appalling rights track record. That's a wrap for another Hashtag Trending. Take care and bye-bye.
Welcome back. Britain's Prince Charles once again faces scrutiny over his finances. Reports have emerged that the heir to the British throne received a £1 million donation for his charity from the family of Osama bin Laden. According to UK media, he personally accepted the sum from Bakr bin Laden and his brother Shafiq following a private meeting in 2013. They are half-brothers of Osama bin Laden, the founder of Al-Qaeda and architect of the 9/11 attacks in the U.S., The prince's official office confirmed that the bin Laden brothers had given the money to the royal charity. However, it denied that Prince Charles had personally accepted the donation. The report follows a series of other royal scandals. A report in June revealed that Prince Charles had accepted £2.6 million in cash donations from the former Qatari prime minister between 2011 and 2015. We were earlier joined by political commentator Kevin Barrett to get his take on the new revelations about Prince Charles receiving donations from bin Laden's family. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
But we really shouldn't be so shocked, because the bin Laden family is not a family of anti-Western terrorists. That is a myth. In fact, the Bin Laden Construction Company has been known for many decades, since long before 9/11, as the Saudi face of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The Bin Laden family is very close to the highest levels of power in the West. And Osama bin Laden was essentially playing a role, and he was falsely blamed for 9/11, which had nothing to do with him. It was orchestrated by American neoconservatives and Israelis. The bin Laden family is friends with the billionaire oligarchs that rule the West, and it's totally natural that they would be passing their money around between themselves. Well, the British media won't cover it because the British media is covering up the truth, which is that Prince Charles and the bin Ladens and the rest of the billionaire oligarchs that rule the West are all in it together. If the people of the UK knew that, they would be even more angry than simply if they heard that Prince Charles was taking money from the bin Laden family.
Moving on, also in Britain, a survey released by advocacy group CAGE has revealed shocking feedback regarding British schools pushing Western propaganda on Ukraine while gagging any student activism in support of Palestine. The findings appear to show the UK government's involvement in both initiatives to peddle Ukraine's sympathy and outlaw Palestine solidarity. A fast-moving wildfire in the northern part of U.S. state of California has got out of control, leading to the evacuation of 2,000 residents so far. The blaze, called McKinney Fire, broke out on Friday in the Klamath National Forest in Siskiyou County. The fire has destroyed homes and infrastructure and has scorched over 50,000 acres of land. It's been described as the largest blaze in California so far this year. Fire officials say erratic winds sparked by thunderstorms have worsened the situation. The governor of California has declared an emergency state. Also, a red flag warning has been in effect to indicate dangerous fire conditions. This is the second major wildfire in California this season after the Oak Fire, which has charred over 19,000 acres. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Thank you for your company. Stay with us.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Mourning for Hossein across history. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. As the Islamic month of Muharram arrives, mourning ceremonies and gatherings are held across the Islamic countries and other countries where Muslim communities live. Nearly 14 centuries have passed since martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, but every year, mourning ceremonies are held more fervently than the previous year. Let us have a brief look at the history of mourning ceremonies for the Master of Martyrs, the younger grandson of the Prophet of Islam, Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Hind was one of the beautiful and pious girls of her time. Her father, Abdullah ibn Amr, was one of the companions of Imam Ali and was martyred in one of the battles. Hind spent for long in Imam Ali's house, but later married to Yazid, son of Muawiyah. Thus, she resided in Damascus. After Ashura, which ended with the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and his companions, the caravan of captives was brought to Damascus and settled in a ruined place near the palace of Yazid. The people of Syria were quite unaware of the martyrdom of the Prophet's grandson and, due to ceaseless propaganda of their ruling system, thought that a group of rebels had been killed in war against the Caliph. Therefore, they were rejoicing. In the heat of the merrymaking, one of the maidservants of Hind came up to her saying, "Would you like to see a caravan of captives who has arrived in our city?" Hind accepted, but came across Yazid while leaving the palace. She told him of her decision and saw that Yazid's face was changed. He knew that Hind had lived in Imam Ali's house and knew his daughter, Lady Zainab, peace upon her. Thus, Yazid tried to dissuade her but failed. Therefore, he told her that she could see the captives at night and accepted the condition. You will hear the rest of the story after the music. After the sunset, Hind came to the place of captives with her maid servants. She had been told that the caravan is led by a woman, so she went close to Lady Zainab and asked her, "Where are you from?" Lady Zainab answered, "Medina." Hind couldn't control her joy of hearing the name of Medina. Thus, she continued, "Really? If you are from Medina, you should know Zainab, the daughter of Fatima, peace upon her. She was my teacher for a while, and I, whatever I know of religion, I have learned from her." Zainab, who had recognized Hind in the very beginning, said, "Yes, I know Hind, the daughter of Abdullah ibn Amr. She is sitting in front of you." Hind was shocked with these words, and while she had removed her headscarf, she started moaning sadly. Then she turned into her maidservants. "Woe upon us! The captives are the Ahlul Bayt of God's messenger." Then she entered Yazid's place and cried out, Is it you who had ordered to put Hossein's head on lance? Should the head of Fatima's son be hanging at my house? Yazid stood up from his throne and, while trying to cover her head, told her embarrassingly, O hand, cry for the son of the daughter of God's messenger, since Ibn Ziyad, the ruler of Kufa, made haste in his affair. May God kill him. I was not satisfied with the killing of Hussein. Hind said angrily, O Yazid, what's wrong with you that you are trying to cover my head while you are indifferent toward the daughters of God's messenger? You have torn apart their veils and shown their faces while settling them at a ruined place. By God, I will not enter your house unless I bring them inside with myself. Thus, Yazid was forced to let the captivated womenfolk to enter Hind's house. Then the women of Yazid's palace put away their ornaments and jewelries and mourned for Imam Hussein for 3 days. Hearing the disasters of Karbala from Lady Zainab would make the women in Damascus weep sadly for Hussein, peace upon him. They were the very women who had welcomed the caravan with stones and reproaches. History tells us that mourning ceremonies were held for 3 days in Damascus, and the people of the city were ashamed of their behavior toward the progeny of the Prophet. The fiery speeches of Lady Zainab and Imam Sajjad, peace upon them, made them understand realities. Therefore, Yazid was forced to order the return of the caravan of captives to Medina in full respect. Yazid, in order to demonstrate his hollow awe, ordered the camels to be adorned with trappings. But as soon as seeing the decorated howdahs, Zainab said, Remove all adornments and cover the camels in black. The people of Damascus ashamedly helped Lady Zainab and children mount the camels. The caravan reached Medina after a while, but resided outside the city for a few days. The people of Medina came to them and started mourning. Then the caravan entered the city and mourned beside Baqi Cemetery and the shrine of the Prophet. After the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, all imams would hold mourning ceremonies for him and would persuade their followers to mourn and cry for Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Mourning ceremonies in Iran were shaped broadly during the rule of Buwayhid dynasty in 9th century AD. In 964 AD, Mu'izzuddin Deylami made it an official edict to hold mourning for Imam Hussein and closing bazaars. On the day of Ashura, Hanafi clergymen would moan and cry for Hussein while cursing the killers of Imam Hussein, peace upon him. Seljuk rulers, too, loved Shia imams. Malik Shah in 1086 went to Najaf, Karbala and Qazamain for pilgrimage of the shrines of the infallible imams there. Mourning for Imam Hussein and the martyrs of Karbala was broadly common in Baghdad and other cities of Iran in the early years of Toghrul, the Seljuk king's rule. Ta'ziyeh has been another kind of ceremony in Iran to mourn for Imam Hussein and the martyrs of Karbala. It is a tragic show in which the events of the great epic of Ashura are dramatized before the audience while the audience sheds tears. During the reign of the Mongol ruler, Uljaytu, Sultan Muhammad Khodabande, Islam and Shia school was proclaimed as the official religion of the country. Thus, mourning gatherings and ceremonies were held quite freely. This culminated during the rule of Safavid dynasty some 5 centuries ago. At that time, versifying poems in praise of the Prophet and his progeny, particularly Imam Hussein, peace upon him, was considered as a great honor. These poems would add to the splendor of mourning ceremonies every year. These ceremonies continued till Pahlavi rule. The first Pahlavi ruler, Reza Khan, in 1935 officially ordered the prohibition of holding mourning gatherings and ceremonies. Gradually, circumstances were tough for the faithful and religious groups as they would be detained and imprisoned. Yet people didn't forget their imam and the greatest sacrifice that he had done in the way of God and revival of religion.
Food for thought.
Salam, and today on the 2nd of Muharram, the anniversary of the arrival in Karbala of the Prophet's grandson, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, for his rendezvous with immortal martyrdom, we present you one of his beautiful statements, which is indeed food for thought regarding approach to God, faith, and religion. For, by my life, what is the Imam except one who judges by the book, one who upholds justice, one who professes the religion of truth, and one who dedicates himself to the essence of Allah?
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the lifestyle of Imam Hussein. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and in today's lesson, we are going to speak about the lifestyle of Imam Hussein. When we are speaking about Imam Hussein, we're speaking about a reformer, someone who brought change that people need to see in the society. So, Imam Hussein is a reformer. Imam Hussein is a changer. He's a leader, someone who can be depended on. The lifestyle of most of the reformers who laid down their lives for communities and in generations remained illuminated, and their fruits and results served as signs for the people. But you know, it was only for a particular period and limited duration. Most reformers who lived during their time, most people who brought change during their time, who had a big impact in lives of people, didn't do it for so long. It happened for a period of time, let's say like 10 years, 5 years, or a period of 100 years, if it could go so far. Or sometimes it goes as far as the age of that particular reformer. So it has a limited duration. Then not after a long time, its effect wears off, just as light dispels in the atmosphere. Now, however, the life of Imam Hussein alayhi salam has split the horizon of history in such a way that he had light of guidance for all the people, just as the signs of death and destruction for the destroyers and oppressors given as a souvenir to all generations. Imam Hussein did serve as a good reformer indeed, and he did that in a good way, that its effects have remained up to the day that we live in today.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. You are listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio, and I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. Now, we've been talking about the lifestyle of Imam Hussein. We were saying that Imam Hussein alayhi salam is a reformer. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is someone who brought change to people's life. It's someone who had impact on the lifestyles of people that he lived with during his time. Now, the life of Imam Hussein alayhi salam emerged with the souls of the people and became united with their feelings and emotions. Because he was such a fresh one, that fragrance of honor and greatness issued from him. He was such a good person, he was such a good to the life of people in a way that you could feel the effect of his goodness to the people that he's leading, to his family people. He was the one to take the society to the field of context so that their aims may be realized and that their fate may be appointed. The life of His Eminence is a great school that bestows goodness and blessings to individuals and to the society as a whole. Now, because it inculcates in them loyalty and patience, takes them to faith in God and the best of destination accompanied with honor and righteousness. So Imam Hussein in this case was just not a person, was just not a leader, but a school that people could study from. Thank you everyone for listening to this show. Until next time, till next show we meet again, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en/Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Would you buy a pair of scrap tie sandals? Well, in the Vietnamese capital, Hanoi, you will find all kinds of handmade sandals from recycled tires. The famously rugged footwear of the Viet Cong have traveled vast distances over the decades. Shoemakers use sharp knives and chisels to craft a sandal from huge tires. For those seeking a nod to yesteryear, the hard-sole sandals are available at markets and small stores alike, with prices ranging from $2 to $1,000. The Vietnamese first began making rubber sandals in the late 1940s during the first Indochina War against the French, using tires from ambushed army trucks. They found the sandals were cheap to make and survive well in wet, muddy and hilly conditions. Even in peacetime, the design remains popular for sustainability reasons. Living through a pandemic is strange, as we are often locked indoors, but a UK-based Indian mechanical engineer made the best use of his time during the coronavirus lockdown and built an airplane. 38-year-old Ashok Ali Serial, who is also a private pilot, had long dreamt of a personal aircraft. He initially planned to order an aircraft kit and built it with his colleagues, but he says the 2020 lockdown left him with no choice but to complete it on his own. Now he has an aircraft which he has named after his youngest daughter, Dia. The plane can carry up to 4 people, including the pilot, and fly about 250 kilometers an hour. After getting clearance to fly, he flew across 4 European countries with his friends. He has also gone on a trip with his family of 4. Some gardens are decorated with genomes and other cute ornaments, but this garden uses tank debris to stand out amongst others. The intention of the gardener isn't to have the most army-themed patch. Valeria tried to remove the tank, but ultimately, because of its size and weight, it was impossible. So he just let it stay. The owner says he is used to having the tank there, even though it reminds him of hard times. Next to the wreckage, this family has planted cabbage and potatoes, which they harvest and use each year. The tank was left over from the war between Russia and Ukraine that began earlier this year. British paleontologists have made an exciting fossil discovery, which has been identified as the earliest known animal predator.
It's quite a large fossil. It's the preserved part is at least 20 centimetres tall, and it would have lived attached to the seafloor bottom. But it's a broken specimen, so we actually don't know how large the entire colony is. This is only a fragment of it.
Wilby says the animal had a stalk and a cup on top with little tentacles, which most likely used to catch food out of the water. The ancient animal is related to sea anemones, jellyfish and corals, and pushes the known existence of these species back to 20 million years. Wilby explains the fossil displays a key point in the evolution of animal. The fossil is said to be around 560 million years old and was discovered in Charnwood Forest, northern England, amongst over 1,000 other fossils.
Summer heat is here and zoos are working to not only keep visitors cool, but animals safe during the hot weather. A Belgian zoo takes extra precautions to help animals survive a fierce heat wave that has left Western Europe sweltering. Pairi d'Aiza Zoo, located in Wallonia in the province of Hainaut, provides animals with frozen food, fruit suspended in water, and extra showers. It has also created extra shaded areas with good ventilation along with water points to ensure animals have access to them. Zookeepers say managing animals in high temperatures requires good forward planning. Zoos across the world have a variety of responses to keep animals cool. So we humans are not the only creatures who feel significant stress during the hot months. Animals, too, are impacted by it.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Iran's city of Rafsanjan has hosted an international talent contest dubbed Stage Stars. The event is aimed at providing a chance for stage talents from across the world to come in the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali reports from Rafsanjan. Let's check it out.
This is a global stage for talents. The fifth International Stage Stars Festival wrapped up with the announcement of winners, who have been competing in four categories of singing, voice acting, show hosting, and sound impression. The top performances from each category won the golden mic and a cash prize.
The festival was a place for more serious competition between those who have a say in a stage performance. I'm so happy to be chosen by the jury as the best show host of the contest.
It was an amazing event for talents. I'm so glad to be part of this. Talents from all across Iran and many parts of the world competed in the festival, so winners should be proud of themselves.
Held in Iran's city of Rafsanjan, the two-day event brought together participants from 14 countries, including Iran, Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, Nigeria, and Turkey, to flaunt their knack for stage performance.
The scale of this contest is global. Many of us participants did not have any idea we could be stand-up comedians or show hosts. But when we got on stage here, we ourselves discovered our own talents.
I really love that, seeing that all people around the world are coming here and presenting themselves. It's a very great feeling. Of course, they will be progressed and they will develop yourself when they will got the result.
The jury is comprised of top Iranian actors, TV presenters, and voice artists. They say the competition has been tough, and those who stood out are real stage stars.
We tried our best to pick talents who really acted like professionals on stage. Not only should they care about the standards and principles of a stage performance, but they must innovate, improvise, and stand out.
This festival acted like a university for stage talents. It taught a lot of lessons about the stage to participants, especially for those who failed to win the contest.
Organizers say this contest is not just about scouting for stage talents. They say the event helps shine a spotlight on talents and lead them to their community.
The fifth Stage Stars Festival is aimed at bringing stage talents to light. Many of the participants already have a few years of experience, so this stage is not supposed to discover them, but to springboard them to a higher level in their careers.
All of the contestants, even those who come from foreign countries, must perform in Persian. However, organizers plan to include other languages in the upcoming editions of the festival.
To those who won the golden mic here, this is a dream come true. But they say, aside from the prize, Stage Stars has marked a milestone in their pursuit of success, since they have now come under the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Rafsanjan.
Age is just a number when it comes to pursuing your goals. That's what 98-year-old Italian man Giuseppe Paterno has proven. Paterno has become the oldest university graduate in his country for the second time. In July 2020, he was graduated in history and philosophy from the University of Palermo. 2 years on, he's now got a master's degree in the same subject. Paterno grew in a poor family in Sicily and always had a desire for learning. But he was unable to go to university at a young age. He finished high school aged 31, 6 years after he got married. Paterno's love to study or for study never stopped, making him enter the university in his 90s.
The biggest and brightest supermoon of 2022 has risen with a crimson hue above horizons across the globe. It's also known as a buck moon because it falls in July. The name does not come from its appearance. You won't see the shape of a deer on the moon's surface or anything. It refers to something that happens in nature at this time. It's called a buck moon because the antlers of male deer or bucks are in full growth in July. Supermoons occur when a full moon comes closest to Earth in its orbit. This is not the last supermoon of 2022. There will be another in August, marking the final supermoon in this year's set of four. During a routine X-ray examination of one of Van Gogh's paintings, art conservators at the National Galleries of Scotland have discovered a secret self-portrait.
When we saw the X-ray for the first time, of course, we were hugely excited, absolutely thrilled to bits. Such a major discovery of an alternative composition happens once, twice in a conservator's lifetime.
The self-portrait was found during an examination of an 1885 painting by Van Gogh as the museum was prepping for an upcoming exhibition on Impressionism. Hidden from view for over a century, the self-portrait is on the reverse side of the Dutch artist's painting called The Head of a Peasant Woman. It was found beneath cardboard and layers of glue. Van Gogh is known to have often reused his canvases, working on their reverse side as well.
When he took the painting to Paris, he didn't have very much money. He was scrabbling around and decided clearly to use the back of these series of paintings that he'd brought with him from the Netherlands to Paris to explore self-portraiture for the first time.
Experts at the museum believe the materials covering the self-portrait were applied in the early 20th century before the art went on display. Art historians say when Vincent van Gogh was low on money, he took to painting on both sides of his canvases, but over the years, some of his reverse side paintings were covered up and lost. The X-ray image will feature at the Royal Scottish Academy in Edinburgh starting in July.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Donald Trump has strongly signaled he will make another bid for the White House, saying on a podcast that he would have a hard time staying away from the 2024 presidential race. The article you're about to hear has been written by Newsweek journalist Jake Thomas. The article has been published by Newsweek and is titled, Donald Trump Gives Latest Hint at 2024 Decision. Very hard not to run. Stay with us for more of Jake Thomas's article. Donald Trump has strongly signaled he will make another bid for the White House, saying on a podcast that he would have a hard time staying away from the 2024 presidential race. Trump, speaking on Friday's new episode of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show, said that polling showed the wind was at his back in a potential rematch against President Joe Biden. The former president dropped a few more hints to the podcast hosts over the timing of his decision about his political future, which has been the subject of speculation since he left office in 2021, before saying he has already made up his mind. Knowing what you know and seeing what you see of Joe Biden, how do you not run in 2024? Clay Travis, a political commentator who co-hosts the show, asked Donald Trump. Very hard for me not to run, to be honest, replied Trump, who pointed to polling that he said indicated it would be easy. Donald Trump added that he didn't think Joe Biden would run for re-election. President Biden has seen his approval numbers sag amid record inflation. Earlier this week, he reached a 37.2% approval average on Real Clear Politics website, which is lower than